my word. All right, so remember we started this thing off a few weeks ago with God of a Second Chance. We talked about how God gives us a do-over or a mulligan. And then we talked a little bit more the next week about how we can know God and how he's completely approachable. And then if you remember last week, we talked about his holiness and how in the temple, Isaiah in his describes the holiness of God as filling the temple like a train. And so his majesty and mercy are ready for us if we just choose to accept it. And we are in a position in life to respond to God in a very unique way. You know, with all the junk that's going on in our society with the sickness and all this stuff, I hope that you're seeing this as a challenge, because the devil is going to do anything he can to keep people out of church and out of being in relationship with God. And so he's going to put everything in their way. Now, you think that people were distracted before with toys and what have you. But I will tell you, there's no bigger distraction than fear. We are in an attitude right now of fear. And so today I want to take a look at the omni attributes of God. And omni is a four-letter word, and it's a prefix to what we're looking at. And so we're going to look at three things. We're going to look at the omniscience, the omnipotence, and the omnipresence of God. And we know that God is all-knowing, right? And he's all-powerful. He's everywhere, and he's present all the time. Tony Evans writes in a book, he says that God knows what we need to be done, and that's omniscience, right? And he has the power to do it. That's omnipotence. And then he's always wherever he needs to be, whatever needs to be done, that is omnipresence. God is everywhere. And so pastors will say that our topic is one of the most difficult things to teach in the Bible. And part of that reason is because the question of where is God? If you look at the news, you ask the question, where is God in this? Where is God in all this we're going? And so we have this skeptical question in our life. And when you talk to somebody who doesn't have a relationship with God, their question is the same thing. Where is God? Or where was God when I went through this? And a person who's hurting says things like, where was God when I needed him? And so it's really hard for us to compare, because we could only be in one place at a time. You know, there are people who are here tonight who are new, and we have people who are not here tonight that are here almost every week, and I don't know where they're at. And the reason I don't know where that is because they're human beings, and they're going to be one place and one place alone. I can't be in two places at once, right? Unless I'm really big, and then I'm just next door. Anyways, so God is everywhere. And God is here, and everywhere he's present all the time. It's not temporary. And so it's we look at God as a substance, right? And we say, okay, well, we got God, he's just taking over Chicago right now, or he's taking over New York, or he's taking over Portland. And really, that's kind of a misnomer. Because God doesn't take over a city. He actually is spread throughout the whole world. And his hand is everywhere, from Cairo to Caracas to Chicago, all at the same time. And so his presence is sort of like the air we breathe. We breathe in and out. It's odorless, tasteless, and it's invisible, unless you've lived in Riverside. And it's not. It has an odor, and sometimes it's chunky, and you can't go outside. But typically, air is, you can't see it. But if you were to cut off your supply of air, you would die, because it's that important to us. And that's how important God ought to be to us. His presence is everywhere. And if we withdraw from God, if we feel like we've withdrawn from God, you can't. You can't step back from God. So we're going to look at Psalm 139, and we're going to look at verses 7 through 12. All right? And this is David writes, and we're going to sit there and just kind of break this apart a little bit. So if you'll follow along, it says in verse 7, where can I go from your spirit? Where can I flee from your presence? If I go up to the heavens, you are there. If I make my bed in the depths, you are there. If I rise on the wings of the dawn, if I settle in the far side of the sea, and even if your hand will guide me, your right hand will hold me fast. And if I say, surely the darkness will hide me, the light became night around me. Even the darkness will not hide you. The night will shine like the day, for the darkness is as light to you. And so, look at verse 7. He says, where can I go from your spirit? And where can I flee from your presence? Those are rhetorical questions. Like when you say to your kid, what are you doing in here? Well, you know what they're doing, right? But you want them to kind of see it. And so David is asking these rhetorical questions because the Spirit of God has to penetrate us. And he has to, it has to be able to, we have to understand that we cannot get away from it. He looks and says, okay, so what if I go up to the heavens? Heaven is great, right? It's a vast place, and yet there's no way of escaping God, all right? And then the phrase, he says, in the depths. Now, in the depths in the Bible, he's talking about Sheol. So you have two different places. And you notice how we go up and down? You know what I mean? Because that's how we see things. That's how we see things. But he says, even in the depths of Sheol, you can't escape me. I will be there. You see, heaven is a place of light and life, while Sheol is a place of darkness. But see, even in our darkness, God is present up in the upper regions and in the depths of the earth. And he says, you, very emphatic, right? It's impressive. It's like saying, God, you are here. You are here. It's a declaration, right? And so after checking the heights and the depths, David decides to travel from east to west. He says in verse 9, east to west, I can't hide from you. The far side of the sea, which would be the Mediterranean, and which is west of the Holy Land, for the Jewish people, for the most part, not mariners. They didn't like the sea, but God was there. God was there. And he says, in the wings of the dawn. Now, picture this in your mind. We see dawn as a place where the sun sets. If you've ever been, I think the best place, the most gorgeous sunsets I've ever seen are in Tucson, Arizona, because they settle in the desert or across the desert toward the west. And as you see the sun just start to go behind the mountain, whatever mountain is there, because it's pretty flat, but you could see it go over the dusk, and it would just, all of a sudden, the sky would shoot orange rays in the air. And you could see this. And what David's describing is, what if I were to grab those rays and fly like an eagle? That's what he says in those verses, right? If I could just pluck those down and fly as far as the light would take me, the speed of light, can I outrun God? No, I can't, right? Here's the deal. No matter where you go, God is always there. So David's asking these questions, not out of ignorance, out of awe, right? And so the pagan deities, the world's gods, they're the God. You have the God of the sun, you have the God of the oceans, you have the God of the trees, and you have all these things, right? But see, these pagan deities are assigned something because they can't seem to understand that God is in control of everything. God is the God of all, right? His presence extends from here to there, east to west. No matter how far David goes, he cannot outrun God. And we try to outrun God all the time as Christians. Have you noticed that? We'll try to run from God, and it might be at a low point in our life. Remember Jonah? God says to Jonah, I want you to go to Nineveh. Jonah doesn't want to go to Nineveh, right? Not because, here's what's so funny, as you read the story, he didn't like the assignment. He was not in favor of telling the Ninevites because he didn't like the Ninevites. He felt like they should just go to hell, is what he was thinking in his head, right? They could just be damned and that would be okay with him. So what does he do, right? He tries to flee from God. It says that he was running away from the Lord. In fact, instead of heading to Nineveh, he booked a boat and sailed in the exact opposite direction. And here's what's so funny. When he went west instead of east, he was headed away from the country towards Spain somewhere, okay? He was trying to get as far away from Nineveh as he could, right? And he probably, like we do, as we pull out of town, You know, we get in our car, we decide we're going to leave town, we don't want to be here anymore, we don't want to go where God goes. He decides he's going to get on this boat, and he goes, and he just kind of, as he gets away from the shore, he just breathes a sigh of relief. Have you ever felt that way when you're running? Whew, I'm out of there. You ever feel that way? I felt that way in ministry, right? And so here's what he thinks. He thinks he's outwitted God. But what happened was, God never left him. God was actually with him on the boat. And matter of fact, God tells him not to go that way. But he goes anyways, thinks he's outrunning God. And then what happens? He notices that God is with him on the boat. And then where's the next place that God's with him? In the belly of a beast. And God never leaves him because he can never find a place where God doesn't exist. And he was guiding him by his right hand. So in Psalm 139:11, it says, if I say, surely the darkness will hide me, and the light will become night around me. So what's David saying? Well, if I just do things in the dark, God won't see. That's why most of this junk that's going on is happening at night. Because people are afraid to show their face for the guilty of who they are. I don't care what situation you're in. It's always been this way. That's why bars don't close until 2 o'clock in the morning. Because no one's up to see who's leaving. You know what I mean? So that's why people go there at night. Because at night they cannot. And what amazed me, my sister, God love her, she was a barmaid, a bartender. What do you call it? I don't know. She served drinks at a bar. Anyways, I used to go meet her after school, and it was great because I could go in there and eat all the buffalo wings I wanted to, and I'd just sit in the back and gain weight like crazy. Anyways, so I was amazed. This bar, it had no windows. The front door was like blacked out. The walls were all dark. And then when everybody would leave, they would turn the lights on to clean. Now, if you've ever seen a child's room, and then all of a sudden you go in there and you turn the lights on, and you see what your child has done, you understand. This bar was a den of iniquity. It was nasty. It stunk. But we hide in the dark so we can't be found out. But see, David says, in the dark, I can't hide from you. You know, we think we're doing something in secret, but everything we do is in the presence of God. The darkness will not hide you. The night will shine like the day, for the darkness is light to you. See, when nightfall comes, it doesn't change who God is. God is God every time. Everything we do, whether we think we're seen or not, is done in the presence of God. So here are the implications of omnipresence, okay? So first of all, God can't be contained in a building. We've discovered that, right? 1 Kings chapter 8, verse 27 says, will God really dwell on earth? The heavens, even the highest heaven cannot contain you. How much less is the temple I have built? You know, I understand when people come to church, they say, we're going to go to God's house. That's not entirely accurate. That's not entirely accurate at all. This is not God's house. I mean, it's God's property, and we're stewards of it, right? But he's in his people. And it could be argued that the temple back then was a holy place. Remember, they used to tie the rope to the monk and send him in, or the priest and send him in, and have to yank him out because he wasn't worthy to be in the temple? Because that was before God came to be with us. And so we would meet God at the temple. And so God cannot be localized in a church building, but he can't be localized in a city or a nation, right? And so the truth is that we boast in America in having, in God we trust on our document, on our money, and in the walls and the halls and those kind of things. We've always said we're a godly nation, right? And what happens to that is our pride has come before a huge fall. There's no state, there's no country that is strictly God's. Now, we've been called a Christian nation, but of late, I haven't seen it. And so, I would argue that there's no state. Unless you're a Texan, then everybody feels like Texas is God's country, right? But I don't agree with that. It's hot. All right? He doesn't wear red, white, and blue. He's not going to, you know, cheer you on at the Super Bowl. Listen, God is not in a city. He's also always present, whether we believe it or not. Now, in the early days of space travel, the Russian cosmonaut went up, and as he looked out, he said that he had seen. He looked out of his capsule and said he didn't see God anywhere. And someone responded, "Well, if you'd have just taken your helmet off, maybe you would have." You see, God is everywhere. Even though you think you're not going to see him, he's there. Even when you think he's not watching you, he's there. He's always available to us wherever we go, 24 hours a day. 24/7 originates with God. That's where we came from. You know, I've lived in so many areas in my life, and I've been surrounded by friends, okay? And I've been in places where I've had lots of encouragement. But I've also been in the desert, spiritually, emotionally, physically. I've been in the desert. And I don't know about you, but one of the worst feelings in the world is being stuck in the middle of nowhere with no friends. You feel deserted. But you're not stuck with God. I felt I was alone, right? And God demonstrates himself in a powerful way. His presence is with us. And he's asking you to remember this before you go to the desert. When you're getting ready to go through these places and you see it coming, just take God with you. That way the attitude is always the same. You're arm in arm. You feel like he's going to be with you. And he's there before you even arrive. And if we understand that, we can have a better perspective of the desert. There are people who love, absolutely love the desert. I don't know. I can't figure it out. I hate prickly heat. But it's one of those things where you get out of your car and your skin feels like it's sizzling off your face because it's 117 degrees. And at night it cools down to 107 and you're so excited because you have air conditioning, right? And so I don't understand why people love that. But there are people who love the heat. There are people who love the tundra. I don't get that either. And so whatever your personality is, wherever you feel like you're lost in the desert, remember that God is there too. So you need to stop running from God. Just wave a white flag and say, "God, I surrender." And do what he's telling you to do. Follow God's instruction. Hebrews 4:13 puts it all in perspective. It says, "Nothing in all creation is hidden from God's sight. Everything is uncovered and laid before the eyes of him whom we must give an account." Are you doing anything in secret right now? Maybe you think, "Oh, no one's going to find out. No one's going to find out." Listen, God already knows. Maybe you have an inappropriate relationship, or maybe you're in some kind of behavior you're not supposed to be doing. And you know, to be honest, there's no way you can avoid God's presence, so you might as well get used to it. He sees what you're doing. He's got those lights on in the bar way before you turn them on. No matter what you think you're getting away with. Jeremiah 23:24 says this, "Can anyone hide in secret places so that I cannot see him? Do I not fill the heaven and the earth, declares the Lord?" Listen, there's nothing you can do in secret. When I was in Ridgecrest, one of those desert places, super hot. Anyway, we had three services, and I was the youth pastor. And so one of the responsibilities that I had was during the service, I would do PowerPoint. And so PowerPoint is what Roger does back here. He pushes the button and he goes forward. And so back when PowerPoint first started, you could freeze the screen on the church logo, and then you could find whatever you're looking for on the computer and then unfreeze it and be live. Well, so we had seen this missionary that came from Mexico. He was an orphanatorio guy. The orphanatorio, is that how they say it in Spanish? Yeah. He was an orphanage guy, and he was in charge of the orphanage. I had heard his spiel already twice, and I'm sitting in the service thinking, "Oh, my word, I got to hear this again," right? And so I freeze the screen, and I start to play solitaire on the computer. I'm thinking, no one's going to see. I see the screen. It's totally frozen on. So I'm good, playing solitaire, right? And what I didn't realize What the computer continued to project what I was doing on the back wall. So the missionary and the pastor, my boss, could see me playing solitaire during the service. So lo and behold, at the next staff meeting, I get this package. And the package is a pocket solitaire game. And he says to me, "So next time we'll play solitaire, Dan, during service, why don't you do this? Why don't you use this instead of the computer?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Don't ever play PowerPoint during the service. We saw it all. Matter of fact, I wanted to tell you you were playing wrong, but I mean, I had heard it three times too, but the reality is you can't hide." And I couldn't hide. It was horrible. God sees the hidden things in our life. The things that we think are not being seen, God sees. And he loves us too much to let us continue in that mode of operation. He presents you with the truth, right? And omnipresence brings comfort as well. Look at Isaiah 41:10. "So do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand." Why? Because he's always with us. We don't have to be dismayed. And it should bring us comfort, right? Because God is always near to his people. When you think you're alone, remember God is always near. If you haven't memorized Hebrews 13:5, the last part of it says, "Never will I leave you, never will I forsake you." God is especially there when you're going through these tough times. He's there, right? Psalm 34:18, "The Lord is close to the brokenhearted and saves those who are crushed in spirit." You see, God comes even closer when we face him. If you've ever tried to have a conversation, you turn your back to somebody, and they can't see you, and you really can't see them, but you're trying to have a conversation. I'm getting harder of hearing as I get older, and as soon as my kids start to talk, they turn their head away, and they start to do this. And all I hear is blah, 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 blah. I like that Charlie Brown teacher. Blah, 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 blah. That's all I hear. And I say, "Look at me. When you're talking, I can't understand you." And that's the way it is with God. We need to come near to him face to face. Look him in the face, and he will be near to you. Right? So, there is a point in our life where the mundane gets in the way. There's a book called Practicing the Presence of God. Brother Lawrence, I'm going to read this right out of the book. This is, "For 15 years, his responsibility was to wash greasy pots and pans in a monastery for a job that he disliked. Practicing the presence of God transformed what he considered to be a chore into an exciting privilege." This is what he writes. "My day-to-day life consists of giving God my simple, loving attention. If I'm distracted, he calls me back in tones that are supernaturally beautiful. The most holy and necessary practice in the spiritual life is the presence of God. That means finding constant pleasure in his divine company, speaking humbly, lovingly with him in all seasons, in every moment, without limiting the conversation in any way." Now listen, you have to turn these moments into God moments in your life. I was reading a story about a kid who played high school football, and he went through all 4 years of high school football. He sat on the bench the whole time. He didn't really play. And then when he went to college, he did the walk-on tryouts, and he walked on. No one thought he was going to get in, but he made it. And, of course, he sat on the bench for 4 years. And then the week before the final game, he gets this note that says that his dad has passed away. And so he's had his dad, has been to every game. His dad went to every game through high school and every game through college. And so the coach looked at him and said, "Look, you don't need to come this week to practice, and I'm going to go ahead and just don't even bother coming to the game this weekend. We understand." And so he leaves, naturally. And then on Saturday when the game comes, they're playing and they're doing horribly. So this kid gets his uniform on and walks out, and he just comes out, and everybody's just weirded out that he's, you know, his dad has just died and he's coming to the game. And so he goes out and he says to the coach, "Look, coach, can you put me in, please?" And the coach just kind of ignored him. You know, a bench, you know, a pine rider, He's just kind of, oh, yeah, yeah, sure, give me a chance. Well, he bugged him so much, eventually the coach says, you know what, I'll go ahead and put you in. So he puts him in the last minute of the game, and the kid makes an amazing play, and then he catches an interception and runs all the way down and wins the game, right? And I'm reading this story, and I'm thinking, well, that's just amazing, right? And so afterwards, the coach saw him sitting in the locker room and said, hey, I got to know, man. What happened? He said, you know, my dad came to every game. And you knew that. He was there every game. But you didn't know that he was legally blind. He couldn't see me play. But today he got to see me play. And see, the difference is God is watching you sit on the bench. He's watching your heart. And if you think, well, I haven't been put in the game yet. Listen, God wants you to be a part of the game. And sometimes being a part of the game means riding the pine. And just be patient right now. One of the things that frustrates me in our situation is that we have to be patient. We have to wait for the world to decide that it's okay to come back to church. I'm not good with that, personally. I don't like that. But I got to watch it. I got to make it. It's going to happen whether I like it or not. So what do? We turn lemons into lemonade, right? So the fact is, God's not blind. He sees everything. And he's cheering for you. He's your biggest fan. That's omnipresence. And when you come to worship, you're to be sold out in worship. One of the things that you can draw an analogy from is that one of the things we're doing right now on a daily basis is we wash the crud off our hands. 1,800 times a day, you're washing the crud off your hands. Why? So you can have a fresh layer of crud go on your hands so you can wash it off again in 5 minutes, right? And so just think about it this way. If you were to get, it's a wonderful feeling. If you ever worked like in a warehouse, I used to work for a company, we did fiberglass like car things, remember that? And so it was horrible. I would come home and I'd be itching all over. And it makes me itch just to think about it. I would come home and it'd be covered with fiberglass fibers and I'd go in and I'd get in the shower and I would just wash all that gunk off of me. Then I was ready to enjoy my evening. So let me ask you this. When you come into church, are you ready to be in God's presence? We need to wash ourselves. You know what I mean? We need to put on a fresh layer of receptance, that's not a word, receiving God. We need to be able to receive God in a way that we've never received God before. It doesn't matter what song Andy sings. It doesn't matter what the message is. If you come ready to hear God, you're going to see God in the little things. You're going to see God in the big things. You're going to see God where you've never seen him before. Because all that stuff is cleaned away. Omnipresence. He's everywhere. Pray with me. Father, we thank you for the opportunity again to hear your word. And I pray that we're ready on a daily basis to be in the presence of you. That we will understand that we're loved. Just like that son was loved by his dad. That we understand that you're on our side. We understand that you're in our cheerleading squad, that you are there for us. Father, I pray that as we close the service out, we would look you in the face and know what we need to do, what is next for us in the grand scheme of where we are. We just need to let go of the past and move forward. We thank you. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Let's stand together.